You like Fireboy? I do.
You're listening to Your Tables on Fire, a weekly conversation with the hottest game designers on Kickstarter. Here comes your host, Jeff Beck.
Why, hello. This is your host, Jeff Beck. You're listening to Your Tables on Fire, episode number 13. With me today, we have Todd Medema, the creator of Expedition. Todd, thanks for joining us on Your Tables on Fire.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're very excited. First off, take a moment and why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. So I'm Todd. I graduated from Carnegie Mellon University a couple of years ago, studying technology, entrepreneurship, and design. And for the most part, I've been working tech startup programming jobs, but I've always had this passion to make games. And I'm always looking for ways to kind of incorporate my pretty unique set of skills of both business and technology and design. And so my roommate and I had been playing Dungeons & Dragons, and eventually, like, we finished our campaign. We wanted to do another campaign, and we asked, like, who wants to be the next Dungeon Master? Silence. And what we found out is, like, everyone knew how much work it was to run a D&D campaign. No one wanted to spend hours every week preparing for it. And so we put our thinking caps on, and we're like, there's got to be a better way. And we looked for other games, and nothing was really singing out to us as the best way to do it. And so we just kind of started making our own role-playing game, you know, because we didn't have time to run a D&D campaign, but we had time to make a game.
That makes sense.
Definitely. We started that about a year ago. We played it internally for several months, and then some friends started finding out about it, and they wanted to play. And then we decided to actually release the game open source so that anyone can play it for free, kind of following the Cards Against Humanity model. And so, you know, even before we launched the Kickstarter, we had several hundred people from across the world, like, playing games of Expedition and giving us feedback. And
yeah, that's pretty cool. We'll come back to Expedition in a minute, but first I want to learn a little bit more about you. Now, I read that you actually launched your first company when you were 14 years old.
That's true. I was doing web development and tech support back in high school.
Very nice. How did that business go for you?
It went pretty well, you know. Definitely paid better than working at McDonald's and gave me a lot more flexibility and also taught me a lot of the skills that I'm using now to start a game.
Now, have you always been into board games and RPGs?
I wasn't really into board games before college. My family had played the traditional Ameritrash games like Monopoly and Risk growing up. We weren't, like, really big into them. And then when I came to CMU, where there's just such a dense population of nerds, and we would always be gaming on something. So that's really when that kind of transition happened for me.
What was that first game that caught your eye?
I'm looking over at my board game shelf now. You know, I think the first real game that I played was Settlers of Catan. And I've branched out a lot since then, but that was the first game that I was like, wow, there are games out there where you can have a lot of initiative and strategy and you're constantly thinking when you're playing, whereas like Monopoly.
It's roll and move. Not a lot to do. What are you playing these days?
We've been playing XCOM, the board game, which is actually where we got a lot of Expedition real-time app-based mechanics from. We also just finished Pandemic Legacy, which you can only play like roughly 12 times, and we played through the entire series in a single month. It was that good.
Yeah, that's a great game. Is that about the same time in college when you started playing role-playing games?
Yeah. I actually met a group of upperclassmen, and they're like, hey, freshman, want to play some D&D? And I was like, what's that?
What kind of character do you like to play on D&D?
Definitely more of the hack and slash type. Give me a big sword and a long bow, and I'll show the enemy who means business.
Very nice. I noticed on your Kickstarter page, at the very bottom, it says designed by fabricate.io.
I'm impressed that you read all the way down there. There's a lot of text.
Took some serious dedication, but I made it.
Yeah, so Fabricate.io is actually a company that my roommate and I have been working on for about the past 4 years. It's an invention studio. Basically, what we're trying to do is just make cool things and hopefully at least make them self-sustaining, so bringing in enough revenue that we can, like, work on the next cool thing. Previously, we had been doing a lot of hardware things. We were doing, like, motion-sensitive lighting and a home automation system, which were really fun for us to work on, but they just weren't reaching a lot of people because it still requires, like, a degree in electrical engineering to be able to follow the instructions. And so when we started working on Expedition, we're like, oh my gosh, anyone can play this game. This is amazing.
Well, let's talk about Expedition. For those that aren't familiar with the game, can you give us the rundown?
Yeah, so Expedition is a card-based cooperative role-playing game for adventurers of all levels. It takes the RPG trope of being very complicated and advanced and having lots of rules and simplifies it while still keeping a lot of the same mechanics. So it kind of bridges the gap between casual gamers and hardcore role-players. To do that, it puts all of the rules on a deck of cards, of 166 cards, and then has a companion app that handles most of the math and helps with the storytelling aspect as well.
So let's talk about something you mentioned there, streamlining. Obviously, you've taken what is typically two or three entire manuals and streamlined it down. How did you do that?
Lots and lots of trial and error. Actually, the first really interesting thing that happened was just by putting it on cards. That process alone forced us to become really concise. So there's a lot of self-editing going on. You know, we look at like a D&D ability and it would have like three paragraphs of rules and we're like, we can't fit that on a card no matter how small the font is. So let's distill it into what's happening. We're attacking the enemies, we're healing allies. And so we kind of came up with a core set of combat mechanics. Attacking enemies, healing allies, buffing allies, and weakening enemies and setting them up to take more damage. Once we had those core mechanics, we were able to playtest them a lot and get a lot of feedback on wordings that did or did not make sense. It's very easy as a game designer to be like, oh, of course this sentence makes sense. Like, I know exactly what it's saying. And then someone who's never played your game before is just like, wait, so do I resolve this a second time or do I have to roll first?
Right. In the streamlining process, did you have to cut anything out? Is anything lost in the role-playing experience?
I think the biggest thing that we've kind of had to parse out for the core game to keep it simple, but that we really want to add back in an expansion, is kind of on the social side of things. For example, D&D, like you have a lot of extra flavor around like, oh, you worship this god and you're lawful good and like you have +4 to like herbology. Mm-hmm. Things that don't influence combat at all, but give you more room to make your character and how to interact in role-playing situations. We ended up chopping that out just because the only way for us to do that would be to add like 100 more cards around character traits and that sort of thing, you know, which is something that we want to do, but we didn't want to double the price of the game and require that everyone have that.
So is there any ability for a player to customize their character?
Yeah. So in the traditional role-playing fashion, players can add to their character as much as they want. Our adventure cards give them a sparse starting point of like, you're the alcoholic diplomat. You have 4 melee abilities and 4 music abilities and some flavor text like shaken, not stirred. What we found in playtesting is actually this is one of the areas that we've kind of gone back and forth on the simplification front. We had initially started with a lot more content on each of these adventures. They had like role-playing bonuses and they had like a whole paragraph of flavor text. What we found is like people who don't want to roleplay are going to ignore all of that. Like some people just want to roleplay for the hack and slash. They're in D&D for the combat. They're going to play Expedition to kill the baddies. And then the people who are really interested in roleplaying really didn't need that much prompting to make the story interesting. And so we kept parsing it down simpler and simpler and found that the people who wanted to roleplay, even as it got simpler, still had no problem expanding on their character and expanding on the story.
Interesting. The different character classes, I don't know if that's what you call them in your game. I think there's 10 of them to pick from. Which are you most proud of?
You know, the alcoholic diplomat is the party favorite. Like 9 games out of 10, someone picks the alcoholic diplomat. That's been in there since like the second version. The hungry halfling is also very popular, more so right before dinner time. But I think it's also interesting, we've definitely been iterating a lot on the other titles. So like we recently added the ambitious noble and the idealist monk. And we replaced 2 adventures that like no one was playing on a consistent basis. And so it's really interesting to see how you kind of discover new sides of your friends when they take on different adventures. You see like the idealist side where they're like defending the poor. And then you see the ambitious side where they're like, no, we should kill the king and steal his gold. So it's really interesting to see it serve as kind of foils to people's personalities.
So also in the game, you have the adventures, you have their abilities that you mentioned. Describe those a little bit for us.
The general formula for an ability is that you have a risk level that you have to roll to succeed. You have targets, so you can target yourself, fellow adventurers, or enemies. And then you have success and critical success effects and a failure effect. And so, you know, if you fail at your roll, then that fireball lights you on fire instead and makes for a very entertaining role-playing session. And then on the success side, if you compared us straight to D&D, that would be something that would be much simpler than D&D. We don't have quite as many like effects that last over multiple rounds of combat or like things that stack in crazy ways. Part of the goal of Expedition is to make it as easy to pick up as possible. And we just found that people were so confused over those rules and especially on the order that things were resolved. In D&D, they kind of handle that with rolling initiative. but we wanted to create more of a party vibe. So we just, the expedition house rule is that you resolve in whatever order you want, and you can even resolve things retroactively. So if your musician rolls something that boosts everyone's roll, and then that makes someone else's ability succeed, you can go back and apply it, because we don't want people to spend 5 or 10 minutes sorting out, like, okay, we need the musician to roll first, but then should the archer or the melee person do their ability next?
Like you're saying, just streamline. What about the encounters and the enemies? How have you streamlined them?
Initially, when we were designing them, we knew that they were going to have a health and a damaging component, but what we found... So one of the things we had originally experimented with was different damage types. So like there was fire damage and cold damage and shock damage. And each of those different damage types had different specialties. Like fire damage would damage them over time and cold damage would make them more vulnerable to other attacks. We just found people kind of consistently getting confused over that as well. Unless you're walking into an adventure, like really knowing what you're going to face, then your choices are already random for you. You know, you might decide like, oh, I'm going to be a fire ranger. And then the story that you're in is fighting people that are immune to fire. We ended up simplifying that down to more basic strengths and weaknesses, just against broad class types. Bandits are weak to music damage, I believe. That also has the added effect of encouraging parties to build diverse sets of skills rather than just like, oh, like, let's all be melee, because that leads to kind of a less interesting game and less interesting combat.
So in that sense, is it kind of a more complex rock, paper, scissors type strategy?
A little bit, yeah. That's an interesting way of putting it.
I believe the final type of card that you have are the loot cards. Can you talk about those for a minute?
Yes. Yeah, it's a very common trope in role-playing games. Like, you want to defeat the baddies and then get something for it.
Right.
And we've actually gone through a ton of iterations on those. Initially, we had equipment, so you could have, like, something on your chest and something on your legs, and you could have armor and weapons. What we very quickly got to was players having, like, 10 cards in front of them. And then, like, every time they rolled, they had to, like, read through every single one of their equipment to see if it was relevant. And that just slowed the game down so much. And also, like, is something that you do more for long-term adventures. Like, if you're building a character that's designed to last for, like, a month or a two-month campaign, then there's a lot more texture that you can develop. But since our target is those fast one-night adventures, that was really hampering the style of the game. And then the other thing that we experimented with and ultimately dropped was loot having gold value. You would start with some amount of gold, you'd buy the loot that you want, and then you could trade it later on. But again, like, we found that even though the merchant situation is a trope of role-playing, it wasn't actually contributing to the role-playing. You'd kind of enter this, like, unrelated mini-game where you'd be, like, trying to buy and sell loot. And we're like, well, we aren't trying to be, like, an economics game. Like, we want you to be a character.
Right. So then how did you solve those problems?
We kind of got rid of equipment loot, and so now all loot is this kind of, like, one-time effect. Like, add +4 to your roll, or, like, throw your hard tack at the enemy and deal them a ranged damage. We just removed gold from the loot cards, and nobody noticed. Yeah.
Just streamlined it. The final aspect of streamlining, like you mentioned, is the app that you guys designed. That serves as the dungeon master, is that right?
It can serve as the dungeon master, or it can just serve as a tool set for a human dungeon master. In the featured quest mode, where the app is telling the story, it serves as a kind of choose-your-own-adventure situation where you read, like, the background, and then the villagers need help. Do you choose to attack the villagers, or do you choose to help the villagers? So you enter these kind of branching stories where you get to choose what path you want to take. We're actually open-sourcing the quest language behind that so that anyone can write a quest, which will be exciting once people start sharing those and you can just sit down and scroll through everyone's quests on the app and, like, see what cool new adventures there are. And on the other side of things, we also have this mode where you can have a human guide. Initially, that was just kind of handling the combat, which worked well for Scott and I because we're both familiar with being dungeon masters. And so, you know, we just did the combat, we told the story, easy peasy. But when we started playtesting with people who haven't played role-playing games before, but playtested having them tell the story, it's really hard to tell a story. Yeah. We read up a lot of books on how to tell stories and looked at what's out there and ended up building a tool called a guided adventure that leads the storyteller through how to tell a good story arc. It walks them through the stages of, like, setting up the background, explaining how people meet, what the trigger is for the adventure, and then it also provides them some ideas so that they can come up with things on the fly. In its latest iteration, we've had first-time storytellers tell multi-hour adventures without any preparation, and everyone had fun.
Wow. So this is not a tool they would use ahead of time to prep. This is live. They'd use it right away.
You can use it to prepare as well. If you're looking to tell like a really complicated adventure with like puzzles, you can still tell a better adventure by preparing beforehand. But we also don't want to limit it to, we don't want to limit the role-playing experience to just people who have like a ton of time to prepare.
You've hit on it a few times. Who would you say this game is mostly targeted at?
It really caters to two groups of people and kind of the intersection between them. On one hand, it caters to hardcore role players who play D&D and love D&D because, you know, this is still a fun and fast way to get most of the same experience. If you don't want to commit to a full game of D&D, then you can play Expedition in a single night. But it also caters to casual gamers and people who know that Dungeons & Dragons exists and have heard of it and maybe even know that they really want to play it, but they know that it's complicated. They know that they don't have time to learn. Maybe they don't even have friends who play it. Consistently, one of the biggest things we hear these people who are new to role-playing say is like, I would love to play D&D, but I just don't know anyone who plays it. And so we're really trying to intersect those two groups and let them both have fun role-playing. Whether it's hardcore role-players who are like trying to introduce their friends and family to their hobby of like, hey, I play D&D. D&D is really complicated, so here, let me show you Expedition. Or people who've always wanted to try D&D, but just knew that the full experience would be too much for them the first time around.
Back to the app, one thing I'm really interested in is how the app is used during gameplay.
There's kind of two gameplay modes. There's the role-playing mode, and then there's the combat mode. And so when you have a human guide, the app tends to get out of the way during role-playing. But when the app is telling the story, what we encourage people to do is to actually pass the app around. And so each storytelling block is read by a new person. And that keeps everyone engaged and invested in the story. And then in the combat mode, the app generally sits in the center of the table and shows essentially the damage timer, because the longer you take to play abilities, the more damage you take to simulate sitting there not doing anything in real combat. And as people play their abilities, they put their finger on the app. And then once there are fingers on the app equal to the number of players, the timer stops and they stop taking damage. And then they go through the resolution phase. The app walks you through resolving as well. And so that's kind of the same for both sides of things.
So that idea of it's a race to touch the app as quick as you can to have your idea of what you're going to do is pretty brilliant. How did you come up with that idea?
I think that was somewhat inspired by XCOM, the board game. Before XCOM, even if someone had proposed that idea to us, I think we wouldn't have taken it seriously of like, oh man, that much stress in a board game is just not interesting. What I think XCOM does brilliantly is forcing you to make a decision quickly where no decision is great, and so you just have to choose the best of the worst decisions. You know, that's this shockingly fun mechanic, and so we spent some time figuring out how to incorporate it into role-playing as well.
If there's anything that's frustrating about a good D&D campaign, it's how bogged down particularly combat gets, but it seems like with this, you're going to fly through it.
Exactly. And that was one of the other things that we looked at D&D, and we were like, why does combat take an hour? Like, in real time, that fight with that troll would have lasted like 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
And that just takes you out of the experience so much. People would be going up and going to the bathroom in the middle of combat because they knew it was going to be 5 minutes before their next turn. Like, no, we don't want that.
Right. No, I love it. That's pretty brilliant. Well, let's see. You guys have been live on Kickstarter for, what, about a week and a half or so?
Yep.
And how are things going?
Really well. We just hit our goal a couple of hours ago, so we're
Wow. Getting
a bottle of champagne and celebrating tonight.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's actually been a really interesting adventure as a game designer. We had previously launched on Kickstarter back in October. We successfully raised about $3,000 in the first couple of days. We are still on track to meet our goal, but putting out on Kickstarter got the project a lot more exposure to a lot of new people who had never heard about it before. So we started getting a lot of really good feedback just from these diverse groups that we hadn't been able to playtest with. And we looked at all of their feedback and we were like, this is amazing, but we set this really ambitious schedule for this project and there's no way that we can incorporate this feedback and playtest it and still deliver on the schedule that we promised. So we decided to take 6 extra months to cancel and restart the Kickstarter so that we could go back and make all of those improvements.
Can you give us an example of one of the suggestions?
So two of them, one was the art. We had originally been using just like literally stock icons from the internet. and so we're actually still working on improving the art even further. We've gotten in touch with some really cool graphic design resources since the launch of the new Kickstarter. But the other was the app, because when we originally launched the app at that point was just the combat portion. People were like, okay, the combat part of the app works great, but where your real true opportunity here is to do that storytelling on top of the app because you already have the app. And like, I don't know if I would back it just for the combat part, but if you incorporated those other cool possibilities on top of the app, then like, I will throw my wallet at you.
You have a few interesting pledge points where people can actually be part of the game.
Yeah.
How do those work?
I had talked with some industry people before launching, and they were like, keep your reward levels as simple as possible. And so we were like, we aren't going to do like cozies or t-shirts or stickers or anything. You can just get the game. And then any other rewards on top of that would have to be things that we didn't have to manufacture, because like every SKU, every different item that you incorporate is going to be a logistics nightmare, especially as we added the storytelling aspect to the app. We just thought, like, there are so many people interested in writing stories. We want to make it so that anyone can write a story. But for people who really want to support Expedition, we wanted to kind of give them something in return for that, where you could write a story and have that be incorporated as like an official story. And that sold out in a matter of hours, actually.
What other strategies have you used to make your campaign so successful?
Reviewers have actually been a big help, not only to have kind of the authority to say like, hey, look, guys, it's not just us saying that this game is fun, but also especially some of the more popular reviewers like NPC Cast and Geek Dad. Those reviews alone have actually driven a pretty sizable number of pledges. I think most fascinatingly, there's kind of two groups of reviewers. There's the ones that we would reach out to and they'd be like, okay, like I review a lot of games, pay me and send me the copy and I'll review it. Those worked from the perspective of just getting people besides ourselves to say that this was a fun game. But the reviewers that didn't even ask for money that could have, that were just like, oh, this game looks really cool. Yeah, send me a copy and I'll check it out. You know, like Robin Brooks of Geek Dad. Geek Dad was actually like, oh, like, you know, we probably don't have time to review any extra games this month, but we'll pass it around to our team and see if anyone is interested. Robin was interested and he played it several times now, way beyond what he needed to write a review. He wrote a glowing review. That's been one of our top funding sources, actually.
That's great. What advice would you have for an aspiring designer who's looking to do their first project?
Good question. I mean, one, if you want to do a project, like just start working on it. Expedition's only a thing now because a year ago we were like, let's just try making some cards. Like, let's hand sketch some cards on paper and like try playing it that way. But I think another thing is to just get other people involved as soon as possible, both from the perspective of making the game as balanced and clear as possible, but also, you know, showing it to other people results in a lot of diverse feedback and a lot of, oh, wow, I hadn't even thought of that. That's an amazing idea moments. And the sooner you start showing it off to other people, the faster you'll get to a game that's truly unique.
When was the first time you showed off Expedition to a big group of people?
Good question. I don't know if I remember that the first, but one of the first ones, we were at a friend's house, we were playing through it, and people were having some great role-playing moments, but there was just so many questions on the initial cards. You know, this was back when we had, like, you started with 25 gold, and you bought your loot. We hadn't simplified the game nearly as much, and what we kept seeing was that people would start to get into the role-playing, and then they'd have to start referring back to cards, and, like, the energy in the room would just drop. And so sometimes it's the feedback that they say that's great. And sometimes it's kind of watching them as a player and noticing what they're unconsciously enjoying and what kind of kills their buzz.
Did you ever get any feedback from a player that was just completely off base?
Yeah. Even now that we have the Kickstarter going, we pretty regularly get feedback from people about how to make the game more complicated. Which, you know, I appreciate their willingness to provide us feedback. And I want everyone to send us feedback because that's how we make the game better. It's also a reminder that you as the game designer are the one with the vision. Just as important as it is for you to hear unique ideas that you've never considered before, it's just as important to remember, like, this is why I'm making this game. And if I stray from that vision and I try and please everyone, I will end up pleasing no one.
Yeah, good advice. Well, Todd, I don't know if you're aware of this, but what we do here on Your Tables on Fire is bring poor unsuspecting game designers on and then play the game design challenge.
Oh boy.
Here's how this works. I'm going to give you a game theme, and then you think about it for a minute, and then pitch back to me what that game might be.
Okay.
All right, you up for that?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay, so I'm just going to pick a theme at random, and that theme is going to be secret passageways.
Okay. So let's see, secret passageways. Is it cool if I think out loud?
Absolutely. That's what we want.
So Secret Passageways makes me think of Betrayal on the House of the Hill, which is a mystery game where you're exploring a haunted house. And there's kind of two mechanics to that game. One is like that there's a betrayer and a haunted twist, but then the other is that you're kind of exploring this house and like good and bad things can happen and you end up sliding between rooms. So my first thought is that this would really be a tile exploration game. Now, I personally am not a huge fan of like the haunted house type thing. I'm more of like a dungeon crawl person. So, you know, thinking you're in a dungeon, I guess it doesn't have to be a dungeon. It could even be above ground. You could be exploring like a river or a forest or something, but we'll stick with the dungeon. I actually played a really interesting game at Unpub where you were exploring a dungeon, but it was player versus player, and people were like setting traps for each other, which led to a really interesting mechanic where the game was always changing because there weren't preset tile arrangements. And so you were going into this reverse psychology of like, well, I think there's a trap here, but does the other player think that I would think that? And did they, you know, let's see, how would you kind of combine those? You could potentially have like one player design a dungeon and then the other players explore it.
Okay.
Almost like a tower defense type game.
Right. So like one player is trying to defend, the other player is trying to make it through.
Yeah. Which at first glance sounds like an interesting game. My only concern is that you would end up with one player kind of sitting out for the whole game. Mm-hmm. But if there was, you know, I think one thing that those games often lack resulting in the sitting out is that the person who designed it then just sits back and doesn't do anything. So I think it would be interesting to add on top of that a layer where the designer also has like actions that they can take. Maybe they control the traps. So you might walk across a trap a first time and then nothing goes off. And so then you signal to the rest of your party to cross the trap. And then when everyone's on the trap, you fire. So yeah, I think I would go with that, like a dungeon exploration game where it's one versus all, the designer versus a group of adventurers, and the designer would lay out a dungeon and have like hidden traps and loot and monsters, but they would maintain control over when those things activate. You know, to keep them engaged with the game and make it a more interesting psychology challenge for the adventurers.
Right, I like that. What would you call it?
Oh, names are tough. My brain hopped to In Too Deep, or like In the Deep, but that feels more like a naval aquatic game than a dungeon crawl game.
Well, you could even combine the two. Maybe you're exploring the dungeon, but the water level's rising the entire time.
Ooh, that, yeah, because otherwise then the players would just take as much time as they wanted to take.
Right. So there's this ever-present crouching danger of drowning.
Yeah, I like that.
There you go, a little bit of a twist. Okay, well done, Todd.
Thank you.
Todd, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
You too.
I'm personally pretty excited about Expedition. I hope it continues to do well, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
Well, thank you. And we have some stretch goals out there. We want to add some new game modes. We want to build some tools for people to print their own cards. We're not in this to make money. We're in this to show the world what you can do with role-playing games in the 21st century. So it's exciting.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Well, best of luck.
Thank you, Jeff.
Well, that was Todd Maidema, the creator of Expedition. You've been listening to Your Tables on Fire. Follow us on Twitter at TableFire, and also visit our website. We've got links to Todd's Kickstarter project, www.yourtablesonfire.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, BoardGameGeek, and now Google Play. Go check us out there and give us a review. Well, until next time, we'll see you later.